Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to episode 6 of the Today's Knuckleball Fantasy Baseball Podcast. I am your host, Timothy King. I am joined by our esteemed writer, Greg Jewett. Greg, how are you doing today?
I'm okay. Thank you for the kind words.
So, ton of stuff going on. We got some day baseball today. It's a good thing about Thursdays. And we've got a whole bunch of stuff to talk about. A lot of bullpen news, a lot of injuries, guys coming back. And we've got some interesting opinion session we'll kind of get to here on how managers affect fantasy baseball. So I think that's going to be an interesting topic for Greg and I to discuss. Probably a lot of curse words. So if you have any children listening, you might want to hold their ears for that segment. So let's get right into it, and we'll start with a guy that obviously many of us liked, big time strikeout guy. He's throwing some really good innings there in Colorado, and that's Adam Ottavino. Looks like he's going to be out a little bit longer than originally thought. Had an MRI on a forearm injury he had, and the MRI revealed some elbow inflammation. So he's going to be out for the foreseeable future, and it looks like John Axford steps into the role now. And until either he loses it or something else happens. But Ottavino probably won't be helping anybody for the next, I would say, I don't know, a month at least, based on what he said. He said he's, really worried about the elbow and, all that. So, Greg, what do you think about John Axford, and what do you think about Ottavino? Do you think we see him again, before the All-Star break?
I don't know. The reports coming out of Colorado have me concerned. I've been a proponent for Ottavino. So, one of our headlight bulletins there was to say it isn't so Ottavino, but it's tough, especially for somebody. He throws a lot of sliders, so having a sore elbow doesn't really help him toss his favorite pitch. So if you own Ottavino, I tweeted out last week, you might want to add Axford just for the short term, and now it looks like it might be a little longer. So we know it can be a roller coaster ride. John Axford, the key is throwing strikes. I mean, he throws 95 miles per hour, so it's not like he's some schlub out there trying to get the ball over the plate. He has a curve and a cutter that he can mix in. But the key is throwing strikes early, anytime. And if you watch him, just be careful, But if he gets ahead early in a count, he can put batters away. But sometimes he nibbles. And then once he puts runners on, that's where he gets into trouble. So, there's going to be a couple of blow-ups. So closers have that happen every now and again. So just be prepared. He's not a super low whip guy, but he did close a lot of games for the Brewers. So we'll see. So, again, if you own Ottavino, you pretty much have to add Axford. If you don't necessarily need the saves, I don't think you need to grab them, but this is just for the folks that really have to have them.
Yeah, I think that's a good way to assess it. I think Axford's the kind of guy where you really need the saves, he's a guy you need to add. But I actually lost Ottavino in a league, and I couldn't bring myself to grab Axford. I kind of just took it and waited for it, and I was able to grab Brett Cecil. But, it's a really bad environment for Axford, although he did have some success there in Milwaukee for a while. And I think speculatively in super deep leagues, I think Rafael Betancourt is a okay stash for the time being, because you never know, like you said, you got Axford. So hopefully Adam Ottavino comes back healthy in the near future, and we won't have to worry about the John Axford blow, because Ottavino had been really, really good. Homer Bailey is on the DL again. He's got another injury to his arm. He had flexor tendon surgery over the offseason, came back, made a couple of starts, did not look like himself with velocity was down, throwing a flat slider, and he is now back on the table list, actually on the 60-day DL, which probably means that he's going to have Tommy John surgery, and he will likely miss the rest of the season, although Bailey has said that they'll try to go to the platelet injection into the elbow to see if that can quell what's going on in that. But I don't think we see Homer Bailey again this year. And it looks like you said it for Tommy John. Anything to add there, Greg?
No, then we'll cover some of that. So in the next segment, when we get to the Tanaka Wainwright, so there's pitchers out there. So we'll run through a list of those guys. You can give me your top couple in that, and I think that all gets lumped in. But if you're a Homer Bailey owner, I think it's safe to drop him this weekend.
It is time to drop Homer Bailey. Hopefully he can get right, because they just gave him all that money, and I kind of like the trajectory he was going on there. So hopefully he gets that right, and we see him again middle of next year.
That really squeezes the, oh, I'm sorry. I would say that squeezes the Reds. I mean, they could have given that money to Johnny Cueto instead, and now they're looking at. I mean, if Cueto's not going to sign with them, they've got to trade him, and I think he could be just as attractive as Cole Hamels because he doesn't have the contract worries. So if they were going to do it, I'd want to get him on the market before Hamels. See if you can get more out of the team. I mean, you kind of got to decide now what you're going to do, but losing Bailey right now doesn't bode well for that team.
Yeah, I was actually going to make that point that the loss of Homer Bailey kind of, solidifies the fact that we're going to see Johnny Cueto on the market here in the near term. So, yeah, I think you're right. And I'd rather go out and go get Cueto. I think he's got better skills, as well as he's not attached to a bunch of money. So, yeah, that's going to be something to watch, and that'll be interesting because Cueto could be a real difference maker. He's been one of the best two or three pitchers in the National League over the past couple of years. So, Hanley Ramirez, just lighting it up. I mean, 10 home runs already, something like, that's like the best in Red Sox history in the month of April. So, he's been everything the Red Sox have wanted and more. Come in and really solidified that lineup, given some protection to pretty much everybody. He leads the league in exit velocity off the bat, I believe, and it seems like every time I watch a game, he's getting up and just completely whitewashing a ball over the green monster, and his helmet's falling off, and he's doing his ICU thing when he gets to home plate, which is fun. But what do you think about Hanley Ramirez? Is he a sell high guy to you, Greg?
I don't know. I mean, it depends on the deal. Like the the trade you made, I can be down with because you were getting other young talent in return that you could keep. So, I mean, but in a redraft league, I don't know if I'd be selling high. I mean, yeah, he does have the injury history, but he's never hit with an offense like this. Even when he was in L.A., I mean, they didn't have quite the lineup that this did, and that's not a hitter's park. So I'm not in the camp where I have to sell high, but if I had a team that was decimated by injuries and I could fill holes by trading him, then I think you have to explore it. And plus, moving forward, if it's in a keeper league, then you might want to trade him. This will be his obviously last year as a shortstop, so that'll decrease his value a bit next year when he's only an outfielder. But I don't think he's necessarily going to just fade into the background. I think he's going to have a career high in home runs. I think now he might be able to bust 30. So it's always been a matter of health with Hanley. So, as long as he doesn't keep his helmet on and he doesn't get hurt, he's going to hit.
Yeah, one has to wonder whether or not that move to left field is going to make a difference to his health. He's had a lot of lower body stuff going on, so that's going to be something to see. You're right. I think he's probably a lock at this point to drive in 100 runs if he plays 140 games. I don't think there's any question about that. Red Sox lineup is just too good. But I have a lot of qualms with Hanley, and if you follow me on Twitter, I'm sure you've been seeing my tweets about Hanley over the past couple of days. There's some stuff going on that's definitely worth noting. So he has 24 hits this year, and 10 of those hits have been home runs. He has no doubles or triples. He has no other extra base hits. 10 homers, no doubles, no anything. Hanley Ramirez's home run to fly ball rate is 46.7%. So for people out there who don't understand what that means, half of the fly balls Hanley has hit this year, more or less, have gone out of the ballpark, which is more than unsustainable. He has a 19% pop-up rate, and, what I do like to see, though, is he's hitting .293 right now, and he has a .233 BABIP, but that also is going to be attributed to the home run. So I would like to see Hanley hit some balls not that I want him to stop hitting home runs, but it's the more home runs he hits without hitting any other extra base hits, the more fluke it gets. So I think, he's probably going to hit over 300 this year. He's going to drive in 100 runs. The only thing that I can see kind of not falling off the face of the earth, but falling to a solid degree, is the home run power. But you know, the way he's hit them already, I think you're probably right. I think he probably approached 30, but I don't know. It's going to be interesting to see whether or not he can, you know, kind of hit some more balls. And you said that he's never played in a lineup this good, and you're right. But he's also never played at Fenway Park for any extended period of time, and that wall is just going to be really friendly to Ramirez. So I don't really know if he's a sell high guy. I think the trade that I made yesterday, which was you know, kind of just, I had a lot of injuries on my team and stuff, which is one I was willing to make. But yeah, it's going to be interesting to see whether or not he can continue this pace moving forward. So let's move on to a topic you've covered well, and you know, you're looking at replacement guys for Tanaka and Wainwright, who are both down. If you're living under a rock, Adam Wainwright's going to miss the rest of the year with a ruptured Achilles. And Masahiro Tanaka is on the shelf with a bunch of right arm injuries, a wrist, forearm and elbow, all kinds of stuff. That right arm is, and that thing is hanging on by a shoestring. So, Greg, give me a few guys that you like if you're down and out and you need some replacements.
Okay. Well, when I did that article, it was obviously just trying to see what's out there. The ex-FIP guys, there's a few interesting names on there. You know, Jason Hamill really pitches well with the Cubs. He didn't struggle till he went to Oakland last year, and I don't know if he's just comfortable in the National League or at Wrigley or what it is, but his ex-FIP right now is only 2.96. In ESPN leagues, he's only owned in 12% of the leagues right now, so I think he's a very nice target. On Yahoo, he's more of a he's at 52%, so he's going to be a little harder to get, but you know, he had some good strikeouts the other day in that game, and that's even been improving as well. His K per nine this year is 8.17, which is very good. So to replace either one of those guys, I think he's the best one that I investigated that's out there. There's frustrating guys like Joe Kelly and Nate Eovaldi. You know, they're getting strikeouts, but they seem too hittable. I'd really like to see them. Both of their xFIPs are very good. Joe Kelly's xFIP is 3.08. Nate Eovaldi's 3.1, and they're both striking out guys. It's just a matter of getting that finishing pitch. Because when I watched the Eovaldi game, batters just seem comfortable in there. I mean, he throws 97 miles per hour, but they don't seem worried. It's almost like they kind of know what's happening. So I don't know if they see the ball well out of his hand or what it is. A couple of other guys that are intriguing is Ruby De La Rosa out in Arizona. He's got a 3.11 xFIP, and he's striking out a batter per inning. So you know, he's kind of flying under the radar out there. You know, Archie Bradley seems to get all the attention, but, you know, a Red Sox that I think you might regret giving up is De La Rosa there. He's got a very interesting arm. If he can really get that changeup, he could be a breakout waiting to happen. Curious to see what Chris Heston's next start looks like against the Dodgers. He got roughed up a little bit in Colorado, but who doesn't? So I'm not holding that against him. An arm I know you're interested in is Drew Pomeranz. His xFIP is 3.42, and he's striking out 8.59 per inning. He had a tough outing last time, but he's an arm that could bounce back. And then A.J. Burnett, if he's available. And I can't believe it. You know what pitcher that made both of these lists? Jason Marquis.
Wow.
His xFIP is only 3.42, and his K per nine is 9.39. I mean, is the split finger fastball really making that big of a difference? I honestly want to watch his next start now and just see if this is just like a hot start like Aaron Harang had last year, or if the Reds just dumb lucked into something. But I mean, Jason, I almost threw up in my mouth a little when I had Jason Marquis. So he came up in both of the lists. I'm like, how is that happening?
Yeah, is that an age? That's an age 36 breakout for Marquis there, Greg. I like Eovaldi as well. I also like Joe Kelly. I've actually seen Joe Kelly live once this year. He's lighting up the gun. He's getting strikeouts. He's always lit up the gun, but he never got strikeouts before. So both guys.
Is it a matter of control with him? I mean, is he just missing spots, or I mean, you saw him in person.
Yeah, it doesn't look like he's missing by a wide margin, but it just kind of looks like when he's missing a tick, he seems to be getting hit. So mm-hmm. I've actually watched all of his starts, and you know, the fastball is it's a good fastball, and you know, I don't know. I like, you know, obviously we're going to always chase the guys who are throwing hard and getting whiffs, and Kelly and Evaldi are both doing that. Ruby De La Rosa is a guy that I do regret, and a guy I have been tracking a little bit more of late. He's pitching well. His control has been fantastic so far this year. So he's a guy that intrigues me. And another guy who's probably a little lesser known, maybe because he has a boring white guy name, is Chase Anderson, of Arizona.
He was on both lists. Yep.
Yeah, he's had some pretty good strikeout numbers. He has good control. He's getting a fair amount of ground balls, and he's got a 3.34 FIP, 4.24 ERA. So I like those two Arizona guys as well there.
I'm kind of surprised. You know, Arizona's a couple of moves of being an interesting team in the future. You know, if they can sell Mark Trumbo and bring up the O'Brien kid and put him in the outfield for power, he's almost like the same person. So they've already got the next guy lying in the weeds. I mean, if they're savvy with a couple of their moves coming up, they've got a nice little thing starting to happen out there. I'm curious. Two other guys that I didn't have out there, but I've been interested in is also Brandon Morrow, and I'm curious to see how Daniel Norris does tonight in Cleveland. So those are two other names that are pretty low owned. It's not pretty, but it's not as bad as it could be to replace those guys. I mean, you can't replace a top end arm like that, but you got to find the best spot. So there's some cheaper options out there.
Yeah, if you're picking one of those guys we just talked about, if you bet them way right, which one are you going after? If they're all available.
If they're all available, probably Hamill's the safest, and then I might like De La Rosa second, Brandon Morrow probably third. That would probably be my top three to get. Although Joe Kelly, I like him. I just don't like those. He seems to. Is it just like a one inning thing?
Yep. He's having those. That's exactly what it is. His last start, I think he let up 4 runs in the 6th inning, and that was that. So he pitched well all the way through until that. But yeah, it's that one inning that's been doing Kelly in.
Yep.
So yeah, a bunch of intriguing options there. So let's talk for a minute about Andrew McCutchen, Greg. He's been pretty brutal so far. You know, obviously expecting a lot out of him. He's a consensus top three pick, and he's not doing much. So do you want to go into a little length or not about what do you think is going on? Is it just that troublesome knee that's kind of hampering him here, or do you think it's something more?
It's possible. You know, you don't know how much he's – I mean, he's been a player that's willing to play hurt. I mean, he got back faster than anybody thought from the rib injury last year and other stuff. So I just don't know if he just wants to play that much, that he's willing to fight through pain. But when your knee hurts, you don't drive the ball well, and he doesn't seem to be driving it right now. I wonder if the 2 weeks off would really do him a lot of good. I mean, if he was my first-round draft pick, I want him healthy. So sometimes you almost have to override the player and say, hey, what, you know what, Andrew, 2 weeks. You know, I'm hoping it's not because
he's
on the
DL, yeah.
But, you know, I do want to watch a couple of games and see what his drive and swing looks like, because it just doesn't seem like he's spraying the ball. You know, everybody was panicking about Starling Marte. He's bounced back in grand fashion, but McCutchen still hasn't found that groove yet.
Yeah, and that's the Pittsburgh outfield that we had such high hopes for. McCutchen's struggling, and although Marte has been hitting for power, Gregory Polanco hasn't been doing much, and he's not walking either, so that's concerning. But, I don't know. I think it probably could be a little bit of the early season stuff, and he's probably not fully healthy. I mean, you know, not to my knowledge, I don't know if he's usually Scott Slow. I don't think I've ever owned him, but you know, you've got to wonder whether or not if he keeps playing. Obviously, if his knee is bothering him a little bit, doesn't bode well for his steal totals.
No steals, this year, and his BABIP right now is .211.
That's right. Yeah, and I was just going to say that. And also, he's hitting under 7% line drives, and he's got a 47.5% grounder rate. So definitely, doesn't look like he's hitting the ball with much authority, which would lead me to believe that that knee is bothering him. So if they put him on the DL, that's probably a warranted site right now. If you're a McCutchen owner, just get him right and, you know, let him do his thing. But, you know, if this you're right, he has played hurt, and if this is a thing that kind of drags out, I think it's going to, you know, it's obviously going to have an impact on his end-of-season numbers. So maybe we don't see 20 steals out of McCutchen. Maybe the power does come down a tick this year just because, you know, we are going to be into May here, and he hasn't done much yet. So mm-hmm. I'd still try to go out and, you know, buy low on him if I could, obviously, and, you know, kind of just wait and see because if he's right, he'll be fine. So the Oakland rotation, we talked about this for a minute before we started here. There's a lot of moving parts, and it seems like that's always the case with Oakland. They've always got guys waiting in the wings or guys in the minors who come up and pitch well. So there's nothing new. They've got Jared Parker, who threw, I believe, 5 innings and 70-something pitches today or yesterday for high A in his first rehab start. And he should be back in a couple of weeks. So that's going to murky the waters for some kind of fringy guys that are relatively high-owned in deeper leagues. So let's start with Jesse Chavez. He was a guy that I liked last year and you know, waiver wire darling there for a while until they put him in the bullpen. He was really good, you know, and gave some solid strikeouts and some decent peripherals. And he's back in the rotation right now and got lit up a bit today, 4 runs in 5 innings by the Angels. What do you think about Chavez? Are you adding him in like a 12-team league?
I don't think so, especially with what you said, because this is going to be they're just going to keep running arms in and out of there until they find the right five. You've got Jared Parker on the way back. You've got A.J. Griffin looming. I don't know if Grayman's going to make it back up to the staff or not. And their bullpen's hurting, so they really need – they need Doolittle back, and they need to be able to get Clifford back into the 7/8 inning role because he can get more than 3 outs like a Dellin Betances can. And I think that would really help settle down the back end of their bullpen. So I don't know if I'm really buying. I don't know if I'm really getting into Chavez unless it's like an American only league or a 15 or bigger one. Some people like him. I'm just a little more lukewarm on him. I think he would be better off in the pen.
Yeah, maybe. I've got him in a 14-team league, and, you know, it was just interesting to me. He did pitch well last year, and he did prepare over the winter as he was going to be starting this year. So he was, you know, relatively stretched out, and he's throwing a little bit harder than he was last year. So, yeah, Chavez mm-hmm. is definitely a fringe guy, and it's going to be interesting to see what they do with the returning arms moving forward. A couple other guys. We don't really have to talk about Scott Kazmir or Sonny Gray, I don't think, unless you have anything important to say about them, because those are two guys that are, you know, they're pretty much rotation locks for Oakland. So let's touch on Jesse Hahn. Returned from a blister yesterday, allowed 3 runs in 5 innings and 6 strikeouts against the Angels. Gets a lot of ground balls. He always did so in the minors. I think we'd like to see some more strikeouts out of him, but I think those are probably coming with some more rotation looks for him. What do you mm-hmm. do you like Jesse Hahn? Is he a 12-team guy for you? Is he on the radar for you?
Yeah, I would prefer Hahn to Chavez personally. I do have him in my AL-only league, so, you know, I like to – he has some pretty good strikeout numbers last year with San Diego, so maybe if he gets that finger right, gets a little better feel on the ball, those will tick up a little bit. So, yeah, I'm definitely more in the Hahn camp than I am Chavez.
Fair enough. I agree with you there. And the other guy I want to talk about is Drew Pomeranz. He's pitching a little better than his ERA would probably tell you. I think almost a run better, if I remember correctly. Get strikeouts, you know, like Jesse Hahn, I think he has to go deeper into games. And that's an issue that Pomeranz faced last year as well. What do you think about Pomeranz? And with that being said, of the three guys who we just talked about, who do you think loses their gig once Parker is ready, assuming Parker does come back, you know, during the timetable, which is mid-May?
I think Chavez is the first to go out, and then I think it comes down to Pomeranz versus Hahn if Griffin can make his way back. So the nice luxury that Oakland has is that they don't have to go out and try and find pitching in a trade. They actually have a surplus, so they can kind of relax on that end. And if they decide to make a run at the playoffs, they can add different pieces if they so choose.
Fair enough. Okay. Do you have a timetable on Griffin? No, I haven't seen anything.
No, Griffin's behind Parker. I think that would be at least a month after.
Okay. Let's talk about the Washington rotation. Lots of lots of trouble with the Washington rotation. I'll let you take this one away, and I'll kind of feed off you. What do you think? What do you think is important to talk about there?
I think just the Nationals just need to breathe a little bit. It seems silly, but a couple of people were tweeting out that win they had against Atlanta when they were down by a bunch of runs was probably what they needed to kind of give them a little kick in the ass and get going, and it seems to have worked. They're in a dogfight right now with the Mets with Strasburg going against DeGrom. So it's interesting. I was expecting a little more out of Gio Gonzalez. I thought he had a great second half last year. I thought he was going to build on it. He's kind of scuffled out of the gate, but his xFIP and other things suggest he should bounce back. So I would like to see a few more strikeouts from him. I think they're going to settle in and be okay. This is as bad as they've been at the beginning. This is also a staff of five arms that could reel off a 10-game winning streak just like the Mets did. So I think it's just a matter of time before this team does go on a little bit of a run. I do question some of Matt Williams' moves, but as of right now, I'm okay buying it. The one arm I'm kind of worried about is Jordan Zimmermann, and I never thought I'd be saying that, but you know, I don't think they've offered him a contract as of yet, and there's some. His swinging strike rate is down to 6.7 this year from 10.3, and he's throwing more sliders. So I don't know if he's just not trusting his fastball or if there's something going on, but it doesn't seem like he was last year at all.
Yeah, Zimmermann doesn't seem right, but he did. I think he did kind of bounce back a little bit. I think he had 3 earned runs. I believe it was yesterday or the day prior. But you know, I look at that rotation, and you know, Scherzer doesn't worry me. I think Strasburg will eventually be fine, and I think you're right. A nice winning streak is easily within the realm of possibility. Between Gio and Zimmermann, if you're buying low on one, which one are you choosing, Greg?
I'll stick with Gio.
That's fair. I could go down to
flames on that, but I have Gio on. I don't have any stock in Zimmermann this year, and I've got Gio on like 3 teams, so I'll stand by my man.
Yeah, you've got something at stake there, but I actually don't own any of them. But I'm in the same boat with you. I like Gonzalez's his upside there and his strikeout potential. Never been a huge Zimmermann fan, just because he doesn't get the kind of strikeouts you're looking for out of an elite guy. Although he has been able to limit runs in a elite fashion for quite a while now. But the guy I want to talk about for a second is Doug Fister, and there's a lot of concern for me with him because his swing strike rate is like falling off a cliff. His velocity is down. I think he's averaging like 87 or 86 mile an hour on his fastball, which, you know, he was never a hard thrower to begin with, but definitely concerning. And like I said, his swing strike rate has fallen off a cliff. I think it's like 4% or something stupid like that. So Fister's a guy I would be looking to deal and do that quick before his ERA catches up to his peripheral numbers there. They do have Tanner Roark. Tanner Roark is waiting in case something is wrong with Fister. I'm not so sure. I haven't. But, yeah, Fister's the guy I would, of the three, I would not be looking to buy low. In fact, I would be looking to sell low if I could just to get him off my roster.
Mm-hmm.
So, Blue Jays bullpen is all yours, Greg.
Oh, John
Gibbons.
I'll
pass it off to you. The baton is yours.
Oh, John Gibbons. I like to shove that baton right up his ass. He is the hardest person to read as far as these bullpens go. You know, Brett Cecil's my guy. First game of the year, he removes him and says, Miguel Castro's my guy. You know, the poor 20-year-old, he had a couple of good games, and the scouting reports kind of caught up, and people were laying off his slider, trying to make him throw strikes, and then he had to throw his slider for a strike, and then they're teeing off on it, so... now Brett Cecil's back as the closer. So, and I feel bad because one of my followers last week was like, do you think Cecil will get saves? And it's like, I don't know. I said, he could. And then 7 days later, here he is. He's back in the role and has a save. So I actually got him off of waivers in a head-to-head league. Somebody else had dropped him the other day, so I scooped him up when the Axford news was breaking. I figured I'll take a shot on Cecil instead. And so we'll go with him there. So if his velocity has been coming back a little bit, he's back into the 90s, the low 90s. So that's where he usually operates, usually around 92. But he's at least made it back to 90 miles per hour. So he's still going forward with the SS Gibbons, and until he blows a game or two and he changes his mind and pins the tail on a donkey and picks a new one. So it's up to him. You know, I kind of like Osuna in that bullpen. I think he has better pitches than Castro personally. So if anything happened to Cecil again, he might be the guy to have just in the event that Gibbons changes his mind. But it's Cecil going forward, and I apologize to that follower, but he had a better closer anyways. He said he had to drop one or the other, so he made the right decision on who he kept.
Yeah, I did the same thing you did. I went for Brett Cecil over John Axford with the choice there. But his velocity is coming back. I saw his save against the Red Sox the other day, and he did hit 91, I think, three or four times, and seemed to have decent command of his breaking pitch. And you know, he definitely fooled some hitters. They get a swing strikeout, but yeah, I'm not overly confident that this is where it will stick unless Cecil comes in and locks the job down.
And that's the whole thing, because you don't know what Gibbons is going to do, because he's fighting for his job, so he's going to use whoever he has to win ball games. So if somebody has a bad game or two, he's going to have a quick hook.
Yeah, and Ozuna's 20 years old as well, right?
Yes, he is. They're both, him and Castro are both 20.
Yeah, a couple youngsters there. The good thing with Cecil is that he has not allowed a walk over his last four appearances, which is good. And obviously Cecil now has to be owned in all leagues because he is on a team that should get plenty of save opportunities. So Cecil is the guy there for now. And I don't know about you, but I was high on Cecil coming into the season, and I addressed him in a lot of areas. So no reason why I shouldn't be high on him again, I suppose, except for the fact that Gibbons is wishy-washy.
Mm-hmm.
So Alex Wood and Julio Teheran are both struggling, and it's definitely concerning. I don't know which one you are more concerned with, but I'm gonna say I'm more concerned with Julio Teheran because with Wood the velocity's still there. It's just he's throwing a lot more fastballs, and his command seems to be off. So if I'm choosing one to buy low on, it's Alex Wood.
Yes.
But I don't think we're going to be seeing a sub-3 ERA like we did last year. However, I think the strikeouts do come back with the command because Alex Wood does not throw a super fast fastball. I think his average fastball velocity is only like 91 miles an hour or something. But Julio Teheran's got a 4.67 ERA, a 6.10 FIP, a lot of walks, averaging about 4 per 9. And the velocity on all his pitches except the two-seamer is down. So I'd go ahead and see if you can shop Teheran to somebody who thinks he's a top 20 starter, because I don't think we see him finish with that realm this year. Greg, what say you?
Yeah, I'm with you there. You know, I think it was written about that people think that Woods kind of traded strikeouts to get ground balls, which it's all well and good, but fancy people would like a few more strikeouts. But, yes, if I had my choice to buy low on one or the other, I would prefer Alex Wood. Teheran's been questionable, and maybe it's the new Braves pitching philosophy, because the manager was saying that he wants Teheran to throw more fastballs. Maybe it's because you're pointing out that his two seam is the one thing that hasn't lost velocity. So maybe he wants them to use it more of. But you know, it's a confidence game, and it's fleeting. And so the league has adjusted to these two young arms. Now it's their turn to adjust back. It's always a game of adjustment. So whichever one of these two makes the readjustment back is gonna bounce back, but I have more confidence, as you do, in Wood over Teheran.
That's the thing; it's that cat and mouse game. So you're right. You know, did you have coming into the season? Did you have Wood ranked above Teheran?
I don't think I did, but I had them pretty close together. The hardest thing about the Braves was trying to. Because their win totals kind of depressed some of their value, so it was tough to put one too high, because I just didn't see any of these guys winning 15 games this year. I mean, they had the hot start, but that's in the rearview mirror. Reality started to set in.
Yeah, and if I remember correctly, we were both kind of down on Julio Teheran as well. So.
Yep. AJ Kierzynski's batting fourth.
Yeah, I know. And he's going 4 for 4 every night. It's ridiculous.
Yeah. That'll last.
Astros bats have awoken, Greg. We get Chris Carter hitting home runs. We've got a rising star, maybe not a rising star, but definitely a fantasy asset, I think, in Jake Mrazek, which I'll touch on. And then George Springer's keeping his value alive with stolen bases. Jose Altuve is hitting 8,000 again. What do you think about the Astros offense?
They are who we thought they were. They're going to strike out a lot. They're going to hit home runs, and they're going to score when they're hitting the ball. So, you know, not too many teams go into San Diego and put up that many runs like Houston did. And they're not even hitting for – they're still batting as a team in, like, the 220s, I think it is, or something ridiculous. So it's not even like they're unconscious. They're just – when they make contact, they hit the ball freaking hard. So – you know, they're not a team that's going to be easy to deal with, especially for left-handers. You got a left-handed pitcher going up against Houston. That's not a good situation. And that's something to monitor, because if you've got a marginal lefty on your team and you got Houston coming up the week ahead, sit them, put in a middle reliever, get you some strikeouts and manage the ratios. Don't mess with this team with lefties. They're a scary bunch. You know, Carter did this last year. Maybe it's his thing. Maybe he just starts slow, and then he's going to start cranking home runs. So you leave him on the bench for the first month, and then you fire him up on the 22nd when he hits his first home run of the year, and then just enjoy him the rest of the way. And I know you did a piece on Mariznick, and you got me, because on Tuesday I almost had him instead of Maxwell, but I figured Maxwell was much less owned, so I took the more of a sleeper approach there, but I definitely had my eye on Mariznick. I was pissed when I got outbid on him last year in an AL-only keeper league. I lost him by like a buck on the FOB thing, but he was someone that I was high on into the season, and I'll let you tell us why.
Yeah, and to your credit, you did write about him early on in the off-season there, so kudos. Not really a post-type guy, but he did get a brief stint in the major leagues last year with Houston, and hit a couple home runs, stole, I think, 11 bases, and, you know, he hit for kind of a poor average. I think he got like 249 last year. But, you know, he posted some pretty interesting numbers in the minor leagues. He was a three-time top 100 Baseball America prospect, which is a little bit of a pedigree there, and you know, he's got a couple home runs. I think he's got like 8 steals this year. He's hitting, you know, I think he's hitting like 380, which that won't last. I think he's probably more a 260, 270 hitter. But there's definitely something here. His walks are down, his Ks are up. You know, he's getting better at avoiding pitches outside the zone, making harder contact, hitting more line drives. And, you know, he's running. He has the green light when he gets on base, and he's only 24 years old. So there's definitely more growth coming here. And, you know, I could easily see double-digit home runs and 20 to 25 steals. So he's, you know, probably a fringy top 30 option if he does that and hits for a decent average. Although he doesn't walk much. But I compared him in the article I did, which is up on the site today. I compared him to a poor man Starling Marte. So a 2014 version of Marte was something like 12 homers and 30 steals with a 290 average or whatever it was. So a poor man Starling Marte, I think, is what Mariznick is, and I think there's growth, and I think if he continues to hit, he'll see top of the lineup there, up with Jose Altuve behind the big thumpers. So definitely a guy I think needs to be owned in a lot more leagues, because he's got a nice little power and speed combo there. So I'm a big fan of Mariznick. I've went out and added him in the majority of my leagues that I could. So definitely a guy I'm interested in, although the average is going to come crashing down. But you know, power and speed is a nice little waiver wire pickup there. And for the other guys, obviously, Altuve, I was wrong on Altuve. If he keeps hitting like this, I thought the average was going to come way down. And I think it still will come down, but we probably misjudged Altuve a little bit, huh, Greg?
Yeah, he's kind of justifying the people that were taking him in the first round. So, you know, I honestly thought, it's only been a month, but I honestly thought Cano was going to bounce back with the power and really show through, and he hasn't yet, and Altuve just keeps hitting and hitting and hitting, and he hits all kinds of pitches. It's not like he just centers the ball. He hits high pitches, low pitches. He's just a scrappy little guy, and, you know, being a short person myself, I love it, but You know, again, yeah, I know Doug Moore was teasing us with his tweet the other night about Altuve. So kudos to you so far, Doug. Right now you're winning.
Yeah, yeah. Don't think the batting average will stick, but looks like he just kind of started where he left off last year. So maybe it's a new benchmark for performance. Especially, it's even crazy to see Altuve continue to hit the way he is, considering the league batting average just continues to go down and down and down. He's, you know, a rare breed, and it's definitely special to watch. But I'd buy low on George Springer as well, now that we're on topic. I think he's going to approach, you know, 25, probably approach something like that this year, and wouldn't be surprised to see him approach 30-30, albeit with a poor batting average.
Yeah, he's a home run binge away from being really, really a stud. So I hope he gets that. Yeah, I think you're just gonna have to eat the batting average if you want his counting stats. So it's just a perfect combination is you can get Altuve early and then get Springer a round or two later, then you've created a hell of a monster. He'll clean up the he'll clean up the average for you on your team totals.
Jeez, yeah, Altuve would turn Springer into a 300 hitter almost. pretty remarkable. All right, so Anthony Rendon, I'm not gonna lie, I'm concerned. I'm concerned not necessarily with his side injury that has held him out of his rehab stint for the past couple of days, but more concerned with kind of, I don't know who he is. Maybe if he's kind of like we're not getting the full story here, and he was fatigued. Now his side's bothering him, and I don't know, and this is definitely part of Rendon's makeup. This is something that before he was even in the league, a lot of people were talking about, and he's definitely had his fair share of injuries, an injury-prone player. It's reported that he could return tomorrow to, I think it's AA Harrisburg, where he's rehabbing. So hopefully, you know, we see him back in the lineup tomorrow. But I'm definitely concerned with Rendon, and, I'm kind of getting more worried every time he misses a every time you scratch from a lineup. What do you think about Rendon? Are you worried?
I don't know. I don't know what to think about him anymore. I mean, I only have him in one league, but it's my home league keeper. So, you know, luckily I've been okay putting Wilmer Flores to cover him in the lineup and stuff like that. But, you know, I don't know how long that'll last with Flores because the rumors are out there that the Mets are thinking about taking a run at Gene Segura of the Brewers because they have a couple of young people at shortstop they could replace Segura with. So that's just a wait and see. But it'd be nice to see him play them more than one game in a row. You know, he played a game and then he's out. And if his side's hurting him, that's going to sap his power. I mean, I already thought his steals were going to decrease because of his knee. Now if his side injury saps his power, what do we have left?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I was with you. I've already kind of given up on the fact that he's not going to steal 20 bases or anything close to it this year because of the knee hit. You know, it could very well be that Matt Williams kind of tells him when he gets back, listen, you know, we need you here to hit some home runs and hit some balls in the gap. Take it easy on the base pass. We don't really want you doing that sort of thing.
But they're talking about playing him at second base and not third base, so that puts his
knee
at more risk.
I know. That's awful. And I have something I wanted to get to if we have time for the managerial thing, but
we're saving time for that segment. So we better start speeding up here.
Rendon stole 17 bases last year. He never stole more than six at any level of the minor league. So even with that, I don't think it's going to happen. But Steamer has him projected for 14 homers, 8 steals, and a .280 batting average this year. I'd be thrilled if we got that at this point. We just need him to get back in the lineup. So, I'm definitely worried, though, if this continues to draw itself out for any more amount of time. Do you want to touch on the rehab guys, Greg?
I'll be quick with them because I want to save time for that last segment because that's going to be fun. So Kenley Jansen should be on rehab appearance as soon possibly as this weekend. He was clocked at 96 miles per hour when he was throwing to Jock Peterson and a couple other Dodgers at the stadium to confirm that he could go out for the rehab. The beauty of that is that Mattingly can't mess up the ninth inning anymore because you don't mess up when your choice is Kenley Jansen. Jake McGee did a rehab appearance 2 days ago. He's supposed to throw again tomorrow. He was clocked once at 93 miles per hour, so I'd like to see a little more velocity from him because he usually throws about 96, 97. But he's on his way back, and that'll be interesting to see too because Kevin Cash kind of thinks out of the box. So I don't know if there will be a set closer in Tampa Bay. He might just keep doing the best pitcher for the best matchup like he did with Boxberger against the Red Sox. Sean Doolittle threw off the mound again, 25 pitches today. So same deal. He'll have to throw some live BP, and then he could be out. So maybe by next weekend we got Doolittle on his rehab. So McGee could be back as soon as early next week. Jansen probably by the middle of next week. And then Doolittle probably a week after those guys to maybe 10 days. So at least three guys who were top closers last year are working their way back.
In Cleveland,
you tweeted out the stat. Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
If we do get to a point where, bullpens are kind of handled like Kevin Cash, you know, handles his, I think it'd be interesting to see a team bullpen approach in fantasy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I know you wrote an article about that before, and it was
years
good
ago.
Food for thought.
Yeah.
So yeah.
Yeah.
But it's possible if they ever do go to that mode, or I think you just go to solds where it's save and holds together. I think that's the easiest way to maximize or recognize the best relief pitchers out there. Cody Allen? Huh?
That's probably the best way to do it, even as of right now, considering the turmoil in bullpens. I think saves plus hold is the best way right now anyway.
It is, yeah. I do it in one of my head-to-head leagues, and it just makes life so much easier. So if a closer goes down, I don't even have to go to the waiver wire because I already have a guy that's getting the holds anyway, so I don't have to go chasing them.
Cody Allen.
Your boy Cody Allen, who's WHIP could be a respectable ERA. I'm starting to get nervous about him. It's more because of the walks. I mean, he's got a walk per inning, not a strikeout per inning. And even though his strikeouts are up, the walks are a concern.
Yeah, they are. Still a guy I'm holding on to, though. The strikeout upside is tantalizing. Got a 14.5% K rate right now, and I like it. He was last night when he pitched. He got a save last night. A double and a single. No walks, had a strikeout, but he was gifted an unearned run. I don't know if you heard about that. The scorer just made an awful decision to not give him an unearned run, but I'll tell you if I get him on a team. But yeah, the walks are way up. Allen does have a 565 BABIP, which probably stands to come down. He's got a 52% command rate. The important one is he's got a 346 FIP, so things aren't as bad as a lot of people think they are. But, at some point the results are going to matter more than the peripherals, and I don't know how much longer, Francona is going to stick with him if he keeps coming in and making it difficult.
Well, I think he'll have a pretty long leash with Francona. I think he'll let him work through it. But, if he ever had to get a day off, it's probably Brian Shaw as a short term. If anything did ever happen with Allen and they took him out of the role, then I think the deep sleeper there is Zach McAllister, who pitched really well yesterday. He had 3 strikeouts in 2 innings and only gave up 1 hit in that time. So he did well in the bullpen last year, and I think he'll assimilate well again to it this year. And I think he's, he doesn't have the talent of Adelin Betances, but he's another guy who gets you 4 or 5 outs in a day, and there's a lot of value with that, especially in head-to-head leagues where he has starting pitching eligibility. And you can slot him in on your starting pitcher's days off and get some cheap strikeouts.
Yeah, because Shaw hasn't been great either. So McAllister's a guy I would look to if I was speculating if something does happen to Allen as well. So you want to go to managers here, or you want to try to cut this down real quick?
Yeah, no, let's go to the managers, and if we have time, we'll go back.
Take us away.
All right, first my public service announcement. If you have a closer and you need to get him innings, do not do it in the 9th inning of a blowout because they don't have the juice. Craig Kimbrell is a prime example of that. He gave up 3 runs against the Padres in a game that didn't matter because Bud Black wanted to get him some pitches. You want to get him some pitches, put him in live BP, do some other stuff. Craig Kimbrell knows how to pitch. He doesn't need to pitch in a game, just to pitch in a game. So, if you're down by 1 in the 7th, why not? Throw him out there and let him do it. Look what happened with the Boxberger game when he went to a tie game in the 7th. Hey, guess what? They won the game. He struck out 3 Red Sox, and then the Tampa Bay scored in the bottom of the inning, and they got the win. So I just hate when managers do that. And you've got guys that are fringy. I mean, Kevin Gregg being used in high-leverage situations, and Brian Price is wondering why the press is asking him questions about how he's running the team. Look in the mirror. Kevin Gregg in the freaking seventh or eighth inning of a high leverage game. You got Tony Cingrani, the kid's a stud. Put him out there and let him pitch. Alex Guerrero is hitting a home run every, what, four or five at bat? So let's sit him on the bench. You know, if you have a young player, find out what he's about. We know what Juan Uribe is going to do. I'm happy he can play some defense for you, Don. Put him in the seventh inning when you need the defense the most. Let Guerrero bat. Let the kids play. You know, it shouldn't take an injury to Carl Crawford to try and get him in the lineup, and then he still doesn't do it. The only good thing of that was that Jack Peterson, who has an on-base percentage of .450 right now in the majors, at least got the lead offer. Look at that. He hit a home run. You know, I just don't understand some of this stuff. I mean, it seems simple from us on the outside looking in, and I know they're under a lot of pressure, but you got to have a pretty good idea of what your personnel can do and can't do. And even tonight, I tweeted that out. Jake Marisnyk is killing left-handed pitchers, but, oh, okay, he moved up in the lineup to seventh. Why not put him second? Yeah. He left a left-hander. Why Luis Valbuena, who cannot bat? He batted .210 last year against left-handed pitching. You want to leave Valbuena in, that's great. Put him seventh, put Marisnyk second. I don't know. Sometimes I think maybe us fantasy people overthink things, but, you know, sometimes we're not too far off.
Yeah, I'm with you, Greg. I think that's one of the great intricacies of fantasy baseball is having to know, not only having to know the roles, not only having to know the skills, but having to know how the managers are going to harness those skills. I think it's an important part of playing this game, and one that a lot of maybe more, I don't know, novice players don't kind of think about, but I think you're right. The fact that Jake Marisnyk is hitting seventh tonight is stupid. It's unexplainable, and I think you're right. We might overthink things a little bit because we are, you know, purely looking at the numbers and in the analytical sense. You know, lineup A of course makes more sense to us than lineup B, but it does make more sense. But you know, managers, some of them are old school, like Mattingly, and I mean, you can't even say that Mattingly wants to make his players earn their time because Guerrero comes up and has a pinch hit home run every time he plays, and he's still not in the lineup. Not only did it take an injury to Kyle Crawford for Guerrero to get some time, it took an injury to Yasiel Puig as well. They're both on the DL, and Guerrero's still not playing. Did you see the outfield that they fielded the other night when Peterson got the night off against the lefty? I mean, it's mind-blowing. And you're right. He can't screw up the Kenley Jansen thing because he's Kenley Jansen, so thank goodness for that. But Jock Peterson, you're right, is a .460 on base. Doesn't matter that he's a rookie. Doesn't matter if he's 44 years old or 24 years old. He's a .460 on base, and you're hitting a 39-year-old guy who has trouble taking walks, and Jimmy Rollins, or however old he is, in the leadoff spot in your lineup. It's unexplainable, and you know, an explanation is warranted because I don't understand how this keeps happening. And you know, Kevin Gregg, I mean, Brian Price deserves every piece of, you know, every piece of like negative talk or press he gets for the fact that he doesn't put Tony Cingrani in a role that is literally suited for him. So I don't know, Greg. It's something that we kind of have to live with.
And it's like the sky's open in Milwaukee because now when Carlos Gomez, he might be back as soon as this weekend, and God bless him if he comes back, because I own a couple of stocks in him. You know,
yes.
They're like, well, we might have to look into him not hitting leadoff anymore. No shit, you think? why wouldn't Gomez bat third? And if this offense needs a swift kick in the butt, put him third and let him do his thing. Why would you pigeonhole him at leadoff? Because you're going to change the way he is. You know, he's probably going to think, well, maybe I should take this pitch because I should be on base. You probably hamstrung his aggressiveness. You know, it sounds stupid, but when I played slow pitch softball, you know, my teams always made me hit leadoff, and my job was to be on base at leadoff. It didn't matter if I got a hit. It didn't matter if I took a walk. They just wanted my ass. They didn't care if I hit a ground ball and just beat it out on an error. They just wanted me on base because if I got on base, 9 times out of 10, we scored a run. So getting that leadoff batter on just changes an inning. But why would you put your best offensive option in that? I mean, you want to get him more pitches. That's great. But put them second then. At least give them in a chance to drive in runs. I'm hoping Gomez bats at least second, if not second, at least third when he returns, if he gets back this weekend. I mean, anything's got to help out that Milwaukee team, but it just boggled my mind putting him at leadoff. You know, it just made no sense to me.
Yeah, I think actually the two hole would be a decent spot for Gomez if they're going to play with it, because it allows him to kind of do his thing a little better, which is hack at that first pitch, which is recognize that fastball and swing at it, which is what he does.
Yeah.
What he's good at, you know, you're right. You're trying to turn him into make him, you know, kind of use skills that he doesn't necessarily, you know, excel at. So, you know, good to see them actually thinking about it instead of just saying, well, he's back and he's only up there now, even though they do lack options there with Milwaukee. But transitioning, because we are talking about the Brewers, and we've got a couple minutes left, Ryan Braun broke out in a big way, a couple home runs, 5 RBI, up at the field home run, I believe, a couple of laser beams there. What do you think about Braun? Hopefully those couple of days of rest did him good, huh?
I sure hope so. You know, it would be nice. I mean, I don't think we're ever going to see the old Ryan Braun again, but, you know, there's no reason he can't get on a little bit of a tear here. Get him healthy, get him swinging. You know, think about the second half from Kemp last year. Everybody was kicking the dirt on Kemp, and then he kind of showed the shoulder was healthy, and he started bombing away. So I really hope, and especially if Gomez gets back, that should get Braun a little more juiced up to play, no pun intended. Get him a few more fastballs to hit. Lind has actually hit well behind him, so that should help out. So, yeah, let's see. You know, the lineup's under construction. I'm curious to see what happens. You know, who knows if they end up trading Segura and they bring up one of the young shortstops, maybe they can ignite the offense in the leadoff spot. There's opportunities there to do some stuff with that lineup. I mean, I don't think they're going to contend this year, but why not tinker a little bit?
Yeah, that's quite a competent lineup. If you've got Gomez back, you've got Lind and Braun and Segura, and then eventually you get Jonathan Lucroy back, and
mm-hmm.
you know, it's a lineup that can do some things. So be interesting to see how they kind of play with that moving forward. But I want to know what's your end of season line on Ryan Braun look like, Rick?
We'll scale it back a little. I'll say 22 home runs and 8 stolen bases.
What's the batting average?
After the way he started, I'll say 280.
That's a solid value, but probably, yeah, you're right. I don't think we see the
his days as a top three round draft pick are probably over.
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, I have more confidence in Kemp going forward than I do Braun, and you're able to get him two, three rounds later this year.
Agreed. I'd rather have Kemp moving forward as well. Let's do a couple more here. Mike Moustakas, do you think he's legit?
I'm curious. I might take a little look at him for tomorrow's column with the bargains, because he might have been a draft day bargain. What I like is that he's hitting the ball to all fields. He's driving the ball to left field this year. Maybe the two hole was good for him, because when you bat second, you see fastballs because they don't want to challenge you. So you're not on base for free with the three batter coming up. So that could have been a stroke of luck for him getting slotted into that batting spot.
He's got a strikeout rate under 10% as well, Greg. That's something.
Yeah, and his contact rate is sky high on pitches in the strike zone. So pitches that are in the strike zone, he's hitting it well. I mean, yes, his BABIP is a little inflated, and his batting average is going to go down, but the key to me is what you said. The swinging strike rate is down, and his Z contact on the pitches inside the strike zone is up. I mean, those are two nice underlying factors that are saying that, yes, he's not going to be as great as he's been, but he's going to be better than we thought.
Yeah, that's right. Zips has him for 254, 15 homers, 55 RBIs, and 3 steals. I think that's attainable, and I think, you know, you got him for free, so I think there's some semi-legitimacy here, although I don't think he's going to be, you know, a super uber breakout. But let's end the show on the note of Kendrys Morales, another Royal who is raking right now, Greg. A couple years ago, he had a good season. He was like a 280, 25 homer guy. Do you think the move to Kansas City after the bad 2014 is the medicine that'll fix him?
I think it's a matter of health. I think that's a good. He's in a good place. It's kind of off the radar. There's not a lot of pressure. I mean, he hit well till the knee injury, so maybe he's finally getting healthy. You know, those knee things take a while to rehab back from. So I'm more willing to say the power might bounce back more than the average, staying where it is.
All right, folks, we're off. Stay safe. until next week.
I'm going to go to the next one.